started. I don't know if I'm about that.
Now, tough luck. Hey now, and welcome to the City Off Campus with your hosts, Sammy Sommerfeld and Jack McFarland. Jack, how's your weekend going so far?
Well, if anyone just looks right away, I'm wearing the Rugrats shirt for the Chicago Blackhawks. If anyone didn't know, wake up. They just won their play-in series to get into the playoffs as the youngest team in the postseason. So it's only natural to wear the Rugrats because that's what they are.
And don't forget the fact, too, that the Blackhawks are also the worst team in history to make the playoffs.
Yeah. No, it's I think Duncan Keith was on the Spit and Chicklets podcast, and he just said, we're just excited to be a part of this because they were playing well at the end of the season before the pandemic hit, but they were nowhere near playoff contention at all. Everyone was just like, oh, Hawks are done. Let's see if they can get a good pick maybe. No, like they just beat Edmonton and now they're into the postseason, about to play either Vegas or Colorado. I think they play today. I don't know when. So,
and did you see what Tays said too after the game, where he basically just said, he's like, we were playing well at the end of the year. We were ready to go. We were just fortunate to be here. And now we're going to show them what we're made of. And that was about it.
Oh, and it's even better to see Taze's play on the ice. Just that game-winning goal where he set up Kubalik like a baby, just fed him like a baby bird. It was awesome. He is – what are he and Kane? Are they 30
– They're 31-32, I think.
31-32. They're playing in their dang prime. It's like they haven't
That's still prime age. Like,
well, people were calling Taze old, and like he had a couple bad off years on like point totals. Last year he had a phenomenal year, and now I really think that they're back in the playoffs. We're just hopping right into the Blackhawk talk. But I really think since they're back in the playoffs and relevant, and he's got that fire of having not someone to replace him in Kirby, but someone to groom underneath him, it gives him a new sense of just being a leader on that team. Like, he's not just a young leader. Now he's the grizzled veteran that is leading the youngest team in the NHL. So it's a totally different team for him to lead. I think it's awesome.
Well, the two, you know, factors that I think are huge are, one, the fact that when him and Kane won the first cup in 2010, they were the young guys who were just absolutely phenomenal, but they had nothing to even really prove at that point, just because they were 2-3 years in the league, like, you know, just kind of coming up, and they were just in the excitement of what the future was going to be for the Blackhawks. But then with this team, you look at the draft picks on the team, where they, you know, they have a bunch of first round picks where they've been in those guys' shoes, but now they're the vets. But the thing that's interesting about it is they're still young doing it. Like, you know, they won three cups in their 20s, which is insane, you know. So to look at where they are, they still have, you know, this time where they're still the core of the team, but they're going to be the transitional piece where if they show these guys how to win, those young guys are going to carry them to more potential cup victories. So that's kind of the interesting balance there.
Plus, if like you referenced Taze's post-game interview, I think I remember one of the questions he got asked was how it feels just to have younger guys like Highmore or Doc or Boqvist, the defenseman, just to have guys like that who are younger playing in their first playoff series, but they're taking the load off of those superstars like Taze, Kane,
Young Scott, legs.
Keith. All those younger guys are just playing above their level right now because they've never played at the, you know, in playoff hockey. So it's awesome to see them measure themselves against this type of competition and succeed, you know, beat Edmonton 3-1 at Edmonton against a historically good power play with, hold on, in game four, the Hawks had like six or seven penalty kills. It was ridiculous. Yeah. They kept taking the dumbest penalties going into period. So then they would open up the next period.
And the boarding penalty?
All right, yeah. Brinkett, I can get why he did it. Like, just in the heat of the moment, trying to be hard hockey. But he skated around and he knew he was in total trouble right when he did it. But Highmore, it was at the end of, I think it was the first period, and it was after he scored his goal, and then he got a penalty before they went into the second, and I was sitting with my grandparents, and I looked at them, I go, he's going to get torn apart. Like, he just scores a goal and then takes a penalty against McDavid and them to go into the second. granted, they killed it off, but no harm, no foul. You don't want to have to put McDavid and those guys in that position. You can't do that later in the playoffs. So the Hawks definitely got to clean it up because they had too many penalty kill opportunities or power play opportunities to let up. So, but they looked really good anyway, trying to kill penalties.
I thought a fun factor of the game too is I thought the Blackhawks had an edge going into their two quote unquote home games because of the fact they were in the Oilers locker room. Like, how demoralizing is it are put into the junior team's locker room, but it's your home. Yeah. Like, when do you ever become a visitor in your home stadium? And I think being put in that position too, where you're just completely moved out of your comfort zone. Now, granted, it's the bubble, it's a neutral site and stuff, but still, with your stuff everywhere, the Oilers logos, the Blackhawks covered it up. They were, you know, to me, if I was a Blackhawks player, I'm like, we just took their home. Like, this is our house. Like, that's what you're saying going into the game.
So are you inferring that McDavid and the rest of the team are kind of mental midgets and that it was a really big psych out for them to not be in that same locker room, to just be in the smaller one with probably smaller stalls, one bathroom stall that they all had to share.
I think it's a small factor, but like you look at Iowa with the pink locker room, like, you know, makes a difference.
That's awesome. I think that's awesome.
So I just think it's a little demoralizing because the fact where, you know, like with the NBA, like home is, you know, for most teams, home is everything. But like with the NBA, like locker rooms are so different. Yeah. And same thing with football. But like with hockey, like with this situation, with everybody spread out in different situations where you would think like the Oilers have a little bit of advantage. They're at home. Like, they can just have a little bit of a comfort level of everything that they're used to. And then you still get moved out of it. And it's the slightest move. But when they showed the junior locker room and the big league locker room, there is a difference. Like, there's a difference.
I didn't get to see a picture of the,
no, they did it during the game. They really? Did a live feed in between. Between periods.
I don't know. Picking my nose or something. I didn't see it.
Mowing lawns or something. Who knows?
Who knows?
But I thought that was funny. But you know that goes into, you know what? Let's go into the meme of the week first, and then we'll go into the biggest.
Should I share my
celebration?
Screen? Should I share?
Yeah, my share screen? Your screen.
All right. Oh, you got to enable it for me, Sam. I got to be able to show.
Oh, that's everyone. Right.
You guys, if you guys don't follow me on Twitter, this is going to blow your mind. I'm a big food fan myself, if you couldn't tell. But there is a cube rule of food identification here. I will show it right here. Okay. So this is what got me going yesterday. So a salad. Anything can be a salad. Is that what we're saying? I don't see any like colors on that square. So is anything a salad? Toast. Is pizza toast? I said that in my tweet. I don't know. Is chip toast? A sandwich, obviously, bread either side. But a taco. This is where I started to get a little mixed up. Like, a hot dog could technically be counted as a taco because the bun isn't broken down the middle. So it's underneath it. It looks like a taco by these rules. A quiche is – soup is a quiche. First off, I couldn't tell you what a quiche is right off the bat, but that's what I thought immediately. Soup is a quiche. The packages I get from Amazon are calzones. I'm trying to figure out just what everything is going on in cake. The one that really got me hung up on this was, you ever just order a turkey club wherever, like a brunch spot, and it's got the bread in the middle of the sandwich?
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's a cake, Sam, because technically, if you look at the cake, 1, 2, 3. So that means one of my friends as well told me a Big Mac is a cake.
Well, now the question is, do you define a club sandwich as just a sandwich or a club? Is it a whole different category of sandwich?
Cake. It's a cake.
Oh, so you're just qualifying it as a cake.
It is a cake, yes. Soft shell tacos don't look like that. They're usually folded over, so it's a sushi. Like, I'm trying to figure this out, Sam, because soft shell tacos aren't usually open. Like, okay, yeah, you get a hard shell taco and it's open like that. But if you got a soft shell with just tortilla, you're rolling it up like that so nothing falls out. It looks like sushi. So are soft shell tacos sushi? I don't know. Look, there's a ton of things that
Wait, you're saying soft shell. Oh, I see. Yeah, it's rolled up.
That's rolled up. That's what I'm saying, Sam. There's so much that I think we don't know that we've just been taught and programmed to accept as Americans about food. I'm not cultured on food. I say I like food. I'm not definitely cultured on it, but I'd say I'm waking up. I'd say I'm not.
What do they do for a wrap? What about sushi. A wrap?
That's sushi. Sorry. I don't make the rules.
The food identification does. Yeah, and a wrap is a sandwich, though.
Nah, it's a sushi. I'm sorry.
Wow.
Everything you thought you knew about food.
When I go to Heirloom downtown now, I'm going to have to request for a sushi wrap.
A turkey club sushi, yes.
Okay.
Or if you have a bowl of cereal with Reese's Puffs or whatever, it's actually a bowl. It's actually a quiche with cereal in it. I don't know, dude.
Wow.
Like, you know how Panera actually has the soup in a bread bowl? That's not soup in a bread bowl. That's soup in a quiche now. The game's changed.
Wow.
The game has changed. Wow. So,
there's a sandwich evolution coming on the rise in 2020.
You know, people used to laugh at me when I said our hot dog sandwiches, but hot dogs are actually tacos, by the way this looks. So everyone else is wrong. I'm the right one. So that's my meme. I'm a little fired up about it because I was thinking about a lot of things. I mean, I have a lot of time to think on the toilet, in the shower, while I'm mowing the lawn, doing whatever. Thinking about food usually.
Yeah, when I saw this tweet,
my mind wanders.
When I saw this tweet, I had a lot of questions.
Yeah.
Brought a lot of questions.
Me too.
So like with a salad, like
what is a salad? What is that? What is a salad? What is it?
It's nothing. So like if you go for a salad, like I don't even know what you do there. Like in that type of situation, like if a restaurant has this chart up and you point out you want a salad, how do you expect it to look like or be received?
I don't know.
Like, can it even come in a bowl anymore?
But I think, Sam, if a restaurant used this as their menu, okay, you could order something like this and you could just put whatever the hell you wanted on your food. Okay, on a sandwich or sushi or whatever, and like you change the different materials or like things so it's not like just bread, it could be like wrapped or whatever. You have this as like a menu to order from. I think we're on to something. I think we could open a restaurant with this as our base menu for people to customize their orders.
I think the city off campus food truck's coming real soon.
Yeah. In university, the food truck's going to be out of business real quick.
So we got to replace it. We can make stops in the library, the Ped Mall.
Yes.
I mean, business would be booming, I think.
I think the University of Iowa students would appreciate us for being a little more woke on the food department. I don't think a lot of people appreciate food and kind of the changes it's going through. So I think we're taking the right step.
I think Catlett Marketplace will be out of business real quick by the end of the year with our food truck.
If Catlett can even get enough kids in the dorm.
Yeah. Now, my question is, how would you simplify the menu for those kids leaving the bars at 2 a.m.?
Oh, you have preset things made.
So I mean, like with this menu, if we need to simplify it because they might be a little disoriented.
Okay.
How do we simplify the cubic rule menu for them?
Well, I'm leaving this. They're going to have to get over this picture. I'm not changing this. If they come in and they're smashed and they look at sushi.
So no modifications.
No. But I'll say that we'll have pre-made things. Like, not pre-made things, but things on the menu that are already, like, ordered, like specials. Okay. You can get a grilled cheese sandwich or a turkey club wrap, like I said, that's actually sushi, or your turkey club that's actually cake. I don't know, man. I haven't thought about it that much. I didn't even think I was going to get to the business part of this. I didn't know this was Shark Tank. I didn't know I had to defend my business opportunity right now.
You got to perfect the elevator pitch. In order for this menu to be successful in Iowa City, I think next show you got to come up with a 1-minute elevator pitch to give the viewers.
Yeah, you're right. I probably should. At this point, I don't know why I didn't have it figured out. It's just kind of ignorant of me.
Yeah.
I should have just figured. All right, so well, now you got to top this. I mean, I don't know how you're going to top this.
So I spent some time when you were first discussing it, just, you know, covering up the previous texts and names and stuff in the group chat. Don't want to embarrass them too much. But I'm going to share, I'm going to screen share this. So, as you can see,
got a lot of censoring going on.
I because you know what, he went on a little rant before that. So there were some nicknames, you know, thrown out. There were some, you know, a little cruel comments back and forth before
all's,
this.
All's fair in love and sports.
Exactly. So I didn't want to embarrass him. There was a paragraph that's covered up in this big first gray block of him talking about the Penguins and Canadians and how the Penguins were going to dominate the Canadians. And, you know, after the Canadians beat the crap out of the Penguins the last few games, didn't want to put them on full blast. Yeah. But back 2 weeks ago, before the whole bubble thing started for the NHL for the playoffs, my hot take, but true take, was the 12 seeds were going to beat the 5 seeds.
Hey, man, that's March Madness. That's just you. That's you being trained by March Madness. The numbers show 12s usually beat the 5s. I like that.
Yeah, so I was following March Madness.
Wow. Smooth. You've been out of sports for a while, I can tell.
It's been a hot minute. As I was following March Madness protocol, and I was explaining to my cousin Doofus, that's what he will be called for this segment. Cousin Doofus, or the family likes to call him Doofy. That's what everybody else likes to call him too. He says to me when I made this take, now count your chickens before they hatch. And I think in terms of hockey, biggest meme of the season so far. Penguins out, Oilers out. Mm-hmm. Great way to start the playoffs. And what I said, I was going to show this screenshot too, but didn't get a chance to take it. The first thing I said after this win was, now Doofus, count your chickens before they hatch. And it was a great way to celebrate the Blackhawks playoff win. So that's my personal meme of the week.
Poor guy.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know who Doofus is.
So Doofy is kind of special in terms of his or her hot takes. Doofus tends to struggle with coming out with takes that actually ever are true. You know, every diehard Pittsburgh fan, I'll give him credit. You know, they don't have an NBA team, so not a real true sports city, in my opinion. You mean no NBA team?
When did he
become
a Penguin fan? Was it when
for life.
Crosby was a draft?
For life. So Crosby has been there the entire time he's been a Penguin fan. I will give that.
Yeah.
So, you know, they have
a season. Pretty easy tickets. To be a fan of that.
pretty easy to be a Penguin fan. They have season tickets. I respect the effort.
All right.
But he's also a guy that says, like, you know, Jeff Capel doesn't pay players to come to Pittsburgh, which, you know, with his Duke background, like, the writing's on the wall. He pays players. And then he's also, you know, a huge Steeler fan, which is easy because, you know, I mean, they won 2 Super Bowls within his lifetime. So, I mean, there's not much to not like about the Steelers besides AB and Le'Veon Bell drama, but that's a whole other discussion.
Well, and Big Ben has had an eventful offseason, one that where he didn't even play and was preparing to come back, but didn't he say it like he had a porn addiction or something?
Oh yeah, Big Ben. I think he had something like
come on,
something
Big
with
Ben.
The,
you're not even
with
playing.
The Pittsburgh players.
You're not even playing, and you're still in the headlines for having a porn addiction. And then he goes, and then I'm pretty sure he went further, and he started talking about his injury. It was in his elbow, right? And he tore some ligaments. I guess he tore 3. And he's like, yeah, there's no quarterback ever that's torn 3 ligaments in their elbow and came back like me. All right, Big Ben, chill out. Like, maybe you should quit whacking it with porn because you got a porn addiction and your elbow's torn. You know, I'm just thinking of the cause and effect here. I'm not a genius. I'm not a doctor. But Big Ben doesn't really strike me as the most – just the sharpest knife in the drawer. I really don't think he is.
Yeah. And the last thing that Doofy does that, you know, aggravates anybody who's a sports fan, he's the type of guy that says with Pitt basketball and Pitt football – that every year they're going to be great. But then what happens? They're awful. The 1 year they were decent, they got smoked by Clemson, the ACC championship.
I think Pitt is good for, in football at least. I can't speak to Pitt basketball. I don't know anyone that outwardly really roots for Pitt basketball. So
it's an irrelevant team.
I'll say this for Pitt football. Two things, actually. One, don't they have those blue and yellow, alternate? All right, those are cool. I'll give them that. Those are cool.
Are they better than black and gold, though, for the Hawkeyes?
No, okay. But they do give one top 25 ACC team a scare every year. They give one.
They give one.
But other than that, it's like maybe they'll have a James Conner, Aaron Donald.
They're like the Pistons of ACC football.
Yeah.
Pistons always give one or two teams a tough time, like really good teams during the season, and then they go nowhere.
I'm pretty sure they threw they had a lineman touchdown recently. And within the past couple of years, it had a great play. I judge how much I like a program if I don't have an opinion
by the highlights.
Not by the highlights, by how they treat their offensive linemen. Because a lot of teams have it out to make their linemen look like athletes and have like nice plays. Like Cincinnati, I'm pretty sure, has a couple O-line touchdowns in the past 5 years. That's good. That's good for the brand. But see, a program like Notre Dame doesn't need to do that because all they do is run the ball. So,
yep.
Catering for their alignment right away.
Pound the rock.
Amen.
But besides that, I mean, what Jack brought up about Big Ben, we definitely couldn't have done that on the radio. So that's definitely the difference between podcasting and radio right there. But now moving on, the reason why I have the house that Jay built behind me and the beautiful Jay jersey on.
Jay built. Oh, my God.
Is he not the Bears' all-time leading passer?
I think so. Dude, it was built before his ass was there.
Hey, so was Yankee Stadium before Babe Ruth, but what do they call it?
Oh, my God.
Exactly. So the reason why I decided to wear a black hat is I'm in mourning currently. I had to wear, you know, since the Bears don't have a black jersey, I'm currently in mourning because the wonderful Jay Cutler Instagram is now deactivated. And it is tragic. I was following since 2,000 followers. It blew up after that. I was an early Jay follower on the gram. Always been a Jay fan on the field. I mean, the way he threw the ball was beautiful. I mean, nobody threw it better than Jay. And
threw it a country mile.
For the viewers and listeners, over the last 2 years, it's been a lot of hard work. But I converted Jack into a Jay Cutler fan.
I've been a Jay fan. That's not – but I also went through my phase like every Bears fan where they said, hey, Jay's do a lot of money. Do we really got to pay Jay that money?
Hey,
that's where I got with him.
Hey, when I met Jack, he roasted Jay every time I talked about him. But now I say, hey, let's talk about Jay today. He's
cool.
Like, we got to.
Yeah.
He was always
cool. Jay's aged from the NFL, I'd say, not like A-Rod, but a little similar like A-Rod to the point where he was someone.
For the casual fan, I'll give that.
You didn't root for Jay to do great. You rooted for Jay to mess up because he just loved those mannerisms of him just going, are you fucking me on the field? But when Jay was on the Bears, you wanted him to succeed. On the Dolphins, I couldn't care less. But once Jay left, like, and he was on his now ex-wife, her show. I don't even remember what her show's name was.
Very Cavallari.
Thank you. Very Cavallari, Calamari, whatever. She made Jay look – I mean, not she made Jay. Jay looked hilarious. Like, Jay was just a dry humor asshole to people. It was
unbelievable.
It was awesome. And then they had their falling out. And then they had their falling out. And because of that, Jay needed to maintain a brand. And he just went on to Instagram and everyone fell in love with the guy. And the chickens just reaffirmed why everyone loved the guy. Because he was making that some great content. But also genuinely cared about those chickens' well-being. So it was great to see Jay as a – I mean, Kyle Long's gone on the record and called Jay not the best leader, but a good leader. I mean,
amazing
Jay,
leader.
Not the best.
Amazing leader.
But I will say Jay has made leaps and bounds with the way he was leading those chickens from death. I'm proud to say I am a Jay believer if he ever makes the comeback.
Jay loyalist.
I think maybe segueing into the conspiracy theory. Of,
now, before the conspiracy theories, I want to talk about how tragic the day was when I discovered the account was deactivated. I want to make some comparisons.
Yeah. I'll make some comparisons with that.
So for me, the two, there are only two things that compare to how awful this day was when I go to look and I first accused Jack of unfollowing Jay on the city Instagram because I honestly thought he did it to mess with me.
Yeah. I would. Yeah.
But it turned out that Jay deactivated the accounts for some reason.
Yep.
So the feeling of loss I had, I almost wanted to host a Jay Instagram funeral on my Instagram live to commemorate the day, to give it a proper burial. But the only 2 days and moments of time where I felt this level of sadness was one when D Rose got hurt and tore his ACL in the playoffs against the Sixers in garbage time. That is the first day. And two, the day the decision was made and that D Wade and LeBron were not coming to Chicago. The death of Bulls basketball right there. Any hopes and dreams of a championship, those are the only 2 days that can be as worse or even more worse than the death of Jason. And actually, one more I'll throw in there. When the Bears cut Jay Cutler and signed Mike Glennon, I told everybody that was a mistake. Yeah. And everybody's like, no, he's just going to be a holdover guy. Like, it'll be good.
It was.
And then look, like, and then look at who we have. Yeah. Then look at who we have with Mitch. It's just Mitch and Nick Foles.
Well,
Jay would have led us to a Super Bowl that year.
I think
we wouldn't have needed really quick to kick the ball.
I think really quick we should just dissect the series of decisions that were made after Jay was let go.
Okay.
We go Jay let go, sign Foles or not Foles. Wow, I wish. Sign Glennon. All right. And then Glennon's there. We trade up for Mitch.
Yep.
And then Glennon plays like 4 games, gets pulled.
I don't even know if it was 4. Might have been like 2.
Whatever. Mitch goes in. Fox throws him to the wolves. Mitch looks terrible. We come back. We run it back with Nagy. Mitch looks, all right.
Yeah.
And then after that, we bring in no one because we still have Daniel.
Except for Eddie Pinheiro.
Eddie's whatever. But then we bring in Foles to now battle Mitch. So we went from wanting Jay gone because he was being paid too much to trading up for Mitch and now being on that fifth year option bubble, on the bubble of paying him a lot of money, but
then, or losing him for nothing.
Right. Which is, I'm sure plenty of people are fine with that. But then they gave a pickup for Foles. Foles deferred some money, so he's not being paid everything he was due.
For like the last 2 years, I think.
Right. So that just means if that's just relevant if Foles stays. So.
Right.
This is a clusterfuck.
Yep.
Complete. Ever since Jay left, in all honesty, the offense has kind of been in a little tailspin-ish. Jay was the last, I'd say, I don't know what to even call him.
Powerful arm.
He was a
potential.
He was the face of the offense.
He was the face of the franchise. He was a quarterback that can be the face of the franchise and had the potential to be.
But he didn't even want to be face. He just had to be.
Right.
He just had. And same thing with like his ex's show. He didn't want to be the face of the show, but Chase took the show because of how damn funny he was.
And how that's boring his wife was.
I think it says a lot about Jay. You know, the best leaders are the ones that don't want to be the leader. And every time we look in life, that's just been Jay.
I'm going to say two things about the situation with quarterbacking with Jay. One, when he came into a hard situation too, because they were desperate for a quarterback. And they were ready for him.
Yeah.
But also, too, I think the guys on that defense just did not want a guy to come in and be the automatic leader of the team when you have guys like Urlacher, Tillman, Briggs, who built up leadership within that organization.
Yeah.
That the attention was kind of being turned away from the defense, trying to make it a more offensive team, despite Lovie Smith being a defensive coach. But then the other thing, too, is I always said that they should have done this, and this is what the Colts should have originally done when the whole Manning Luck situation happened, was give the current quarterback face of the franchise a year to guide and coach up the young rookie. So keep Jay for a year, see how it plays out with, you know, Fox or the new coach or whoever, see what happens, because they were kind of building up an offensive line and stuff at the time. And they had Jordan Howard, who was a Pro Bowl running back at the time. And then what you do is you hand over the keys to the rookie, or if he's not ready yet, sign him to another 1 year extension for a cheaper, amount. So not paying him 20, 30 million, but pay him around 15, and then send him off into the sunset, into retirement. 'Cause that's what would have happened. But Jay had that itch to go to Miami, and he beat New England.
Not
that
even
New England
an itch
win.
To go to Miami, the itch to go to the booth. And then for whatever freaking reason, he got the itch to go to Miami. He didn't even look like he wanted to be there. He just secured a bag.
He wanted to be a Bear. He wanted to be a Bear.
He secured a bag. But I want to go back to what you were saying about the defensive leadership of the Bears not necessarily wanting Jay to take over. Yeah.
Urlacher hated him.
And I can see that because, you know, you look at that 2005 Super Bowl team, and it was led by Rex Grossman, who was one of the worst statistical quarterbacks.
You couldn't throw in the rain.
Ever to lead a team to a Super Bowl. That defense was the identity of that team. Once Rex leaves, the next quarterback was Kyle Orton, who Kyle Orton was an average NFL quarterback for a 4 year period, maybe five. That was about it. He wasn't much else. So the Bears haven't ever really in their history, other than McMahon, have a quarterback that
Sid Luckman, but he's just an old.
Yeah, dude, but who the hell was alive for him right now? That's what I'm saying. There hasn't been a quarterback worth a damn to be the face or look of the franchise. And Jay came right in, and change hurts a lot of people. Not a lot of people want change, especially that leadership on the Bears D, Briggs, Urlacher, Tillman, whoever else. I'm sure they weren't on board with it right away, especially with Jay's personality. I mean, it's tough to get behind. It's tough to see that as everyone's best intentions when he just looks like he wants to smoke a dart on the field and doesn't give a shit. I mean, and actually, Jay cares a ton, and he did care a ton. So, you know, I think the Bears beat themselves up with Jay. It was a really tough time. You know, the city loved and hated Jay. Hated him.
And they loved the potential but hated the results. That's what I kind of like to say.
It was a love the potential, love the results as well. But it was a hate how you had to get to the results, because Jay didn't care what people had to think about his arm. He would put it out there and throw it to Marshall or Jeffrey. He didn't give a shit. Look, he's got 2 6'3", 6'4" receivers.
It was amazing. He would be yelled, and Martellus Bennett.
He would be yelled at to not throw it up to them. But then he was yelled at for throwing it up to them and throwing a deep pick. So it was damned if he was, damned if he wasn't. So, it was tough for Jay. He did the best he could. And they got this close to a damn Super Bowl. This freaking close.
And they would have won it too.
Yeah.
With that team.
I went to that Super Bowl. My uncle for my birthday was surprising me with Super Bowl tickets in anticipation that the fucking Bears were going to be there, pretty sure. And it was the fucking Packers.
Did you go?
Yeah, I went. I wore an Urlacher jersey and everything in Dallas. It was craziness. I was so upset, but I was so happy to be there. It was, man, if the Bears were there and Jay was there in Jerry's world, I might have died happy at the age of like 11.
Yep.
11. I got to find it. I'll post it on my socials.
You got to find it. Got to post that picture.
A picture of me. My friends have it. I'm chubby as a boy ever. I'm sitting with like the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders absolutely stunting on it. Oh man, it was awesome. It was some good stuff.
Your first girlfriends?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And then they signed I got a like a poster of like all of the Dallas Cowboy cheerleaders or whatever. And I think they signed it for me. I was like, oh, this is pretty cool. But yeah, that was about it.
No, but for me, like, what's tough about it when you look at the Jay era as the quarterback of the Bears did a bad job of timing the transitions, because they were trying to become a more offensive team as Urlacher and Briggs and all them kind of were phasing out. Because if you look at Jay's prime, he was a Pro Bowl quarterback in Denver right before he came, but he still had a lot of growth and a lot of development, and he didn't have the offensive weapons when he first came to Chicago. That's another thing. Like, Matt Forte was there, but there was no wide receivers at the time to really support him. Like, they made Devin Hester a wide receiver. And no O-line.
Jay was one of the most sacked quarterbacks ever.
Gabe Carimi or Carmarney or whatever was his.
Gabe Carimi was the the softest, like, baby shit O-lineman ever. Oh, my God.
That was his star O-lineman.
Oh, my God. So,
when you look at the team, they had the defense. They didn't have the offense. Then when they did, Urlacher and Briggs were getting hurt all the time. So that didn't help the situation.
Yep.
Then when they're kind of phasing out, you have Jay, Marshall, Alshon, Martellus, Matt Forte, Chester Taylor, whoever else. You had that offense was electric, but what you didn't have the defense.
I want to look up that entire roster. Is that
2012, 13?
I was going to say that. Yeah, keep going. Sorry.
12, 13, 14 is kind of the range. And then when you look at the team, they get Shea McClellan on defense to take over for Urlacher. John Bostic, who was awful, but he became a role player in the NFL after he left. Shea McClellan
was nothing. The Bears passed up on Dante Chris Hightower, Conte. Chandler Jones, Bobby Wagner, and they took Shea fucking McClellan. Yep. A Boise State outside linebacker they wanted to put at middle. Boise State played in the same conference, if I'm not mistaken, as Utah State at the time, Mountain West. Utah State had Bobby Wagner, who still plays, who is definitely
he won the Super Bowl
in the upper echelon of middle linebackers with Urlacher, I'm sure, when his career is done. And the Bears could have had a succession right there.
Yep.
Right there.
Yep.
I don't know why.
And then it took 5 years for us to get any type of linebacker in there. It's awful. Yeah. And so when you look at it, Jay never had really a team around him like Rodgers had a complete team. Rodgers had the receivers for years. He had the defense. He had the whole well-rounded team to go with his arm where at certain points he could carry the team. But Jay never had a defense that could compete as high as the offense or an offense that could compete as high as the defense. So that's why I've said for the longest time too, if he had the O-line – with that Marshall, Martellus, and Alshon lineup with Forte, they would have been unstoppable. Even if the defense wasn't as good, he didn't have the O-line. He had Kyle Long coming up, and that was it.
Yeah, I'm looking
and that's
at
where
the,
it's the biggest
roster
what
right if. Now. I'm looking at the roster right now, and we're talking about around like 2014. So the starters were Cutler, Forte, Alshon, Marshall, Bennett. Their O-line was – Jermon Bushrod, who was not bad. He was pretty okay.
He was solid.
Michael Ola.
But he got hurt a lot.
He was a rookie. Wasn't great. Garza, who was 35 at the time. Kyle Long, who was.
I mean, they moved Garza to center, too. Yeah. Garza wasn't originally a center.
Jordan Mills, who was a fifth-round pick.
He was awful.
Was not good. So that O-line's not great, but you go to the defensive side. They have Lamar Houston, who tears his ACL celebrating a sack. Stephen Paille, who they let walk too quick. He set up a bench press record at the combine. Great nose tackle. You let him walk. Jared Allen, who's 15 years too late on his career.
Right.
Lance Briggs, who's 34. I could probably run quicker than him at that time. Yeah. DJ Williams. Yeah, he was getting really hurt. DJ Williams, who nothing.
He was
Shea
a big
McClellan,
disappointment.
Nothing. And then your secondary is Tim Jennings, who's on the tail end of his career, had no interceptions. Rookie Kyle Fuller, great bright spot, but your safeties are trash. Yep. Ryan Mundy and Chris Conte.
Yep. Like Chris Conte was awful.
His team just – it had the weapons, just not the grit, I think.
Right. The grit of the Bears four years before that.
And that team in 2014 was, guess who? Mark Trestman's team. So they were terrible. Yep. Then they go to John Fox, their O-line, Charles Leno, Matt Slauson, Hornace Grassu who gets
Matt
hurt.
Matt Slauson was a huge disappointment because he was a great lineman.
I liked Matt Slauson. He was good because he could play. He played guard and center. He played for Grassu once he got hurt. And then they had Vlad Dukas, who was trash. And then they put Kyle Long at tackle, which a terrible experiment.
Yeah. So
a bunch of bad decisions just plagued the Bears all over during the Cutler era. There was glimmers of hope and definitely
15
a lot
was
of chances.
Cutler's best year with Gase. That was his best year.
Yeah, definitely. Well,
but then like there was that, it was 2014 or 2015 where they had the season where they had week 17 against the Packers, and that was to go to the playoffs.
Oh, that's when
and they were winning the game, the entire game with 3 minutes left or whatever. And then Rodgers hits Davante Adams with like nothing left in the game, and then the Bears lost.
Was that the Chris Conti blowing the coverage?
Yeah.
That was Randall Cobb. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, it was Randall Cobb.
The guy was a Bears killer.
Yeah. So it's just with that. So now going into the conspiracies. The conspiracy I have lined up is actually coinciding with the NFC Championship game. This is kind of where my take is. You know, Haney and Collins and all the backup quarterbacks loved Jay for getting hurt and quote-unquote quitting on the team in that game because they weren't blamed for losing the NFC Championship game to the Packers.
Dogs but, are barking 1 sec.
Oh, I hear it. Jack just has to go talk to his – go handle the dogs. But in the meantime, while we wait for Jack, we will discuss – You know what, we're going to do a poll on Instagram where we're going to do a vote of was Jay a bigger letdown or was the Bears management a bigger letdown? What we'll do is
ridiculous. Yeah,
we'll just cut, like, if you edit it or whatever, we'll just cut this part out. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll just do that because I was gonna start trying to talk about something and then I was like, you know what? I'm saving it for when you're back on. So my conspiracy is linking the 2010 NFC Championship game where Haney and Collins avoided the blame or anything. It was all Jay quitting on the team, being on the bike, the whole thing. So I think they got a little jealous that Jay was kind of getting this sudden fame and that people actually enjoyed Jay now, or maybe in the future when they look at that game, they're going to be like, hold up. It's not Jay's fault, actually. It's Haney and Collins' fault. So I think they kind of conspired together, reached out to Instagram, kind of said, listen, Jay's content, extremely offensive to chickens everywhere. Animal cruelty, even though he's trying to help the chickens, we don't support it. And they got Jay banned. And they even said to him, you know, this Jay's unstable. He's getting divorced. He's just, you know, he might have slept with his wife's best friend. Like, who knows? And they just are calling him out. And they're making up fake news about Jay, and I think that's what got his account deactivated. Personally, I think they're just worried Jay's getting too beloved by the country. What's your take, Jack?
So this one's outlandish, but it goes along the lines with the same chicken situation. So Chick-fil-A is one of the largest chicken fast food restaurants, right?
It's the best.
The best.
That's what it is.
Arguably, but Popeye's chicken sandwich is on the rise. I digress.
You hunted for that one. You hunted for the Popeye's when it came out.
Oh, it was worth it. So obviously, Chick-fil-A has a lot of sway, I'd say, in America at this time. It's all driven by money. Money is power. Chick-fil-A's got the money. Obviously, what Jay was doing with the chickens was bad for the brand, bad for chickens. So I think Chick-fil-A has kept up the motto of no, we're not open on Sundays. And since Jay usually thrived on Sundays, Chick-fil-A said, hey, we're going to close Jay down.
Ooh.
So they closed his Instagram down. They shut his voice.
I think like that one.
Chick-fil-A is trying to censor Jay Cutler. I don't know why. Jay tried his best to keep those dang chickens alive for Chick-fil-A to harvest. I don't know.
You know what?
You rather than eat more chicken, I think Jay was kind of saying, let's love more chicken. And I don't know if Chick-fil-A was
I thought Jay was a big chicken advocate.
Yeah.
But what Chick-fil-A could have said too is, hey, Jay played in Colorado and Chicago. Those are beef states. We can't stand the beef. You know what? That's what he represents. And he's helping chickens right now.
Yeah.
You know what? He's saving chicken lives. That's taking away from business. We got to tear him down.
It's a hunch. I think it's true.
Yeah. They could be a part of cancel culture with this conspiracy idea.
I would not rule that out of the picture. Plus, what is Jay religious?
I'm not sure.
He doesn't strike me as the religious type, and Chick-fil-A's owner, I think, is rather religious. Oh, yeah,
always closes down on Sundays.
So, it's just another avenue for him to attack him. Look,
that's a good one.
I really do believe it. I really do.
You know what? You sold me. That argument really sold me. I respect it. So now moving over to some football action away from Jay Cutler. So the Big Ten has been doing a lot of announcements about how they're handling the season and the Big Ten coaches meeting, president's meeting. So I'll let you go into the president's meeting after I bring up the coaches meeting. The biggest beef from the coaches meeting that supposedly came out is Harbaugh is calling Ryan Day of Ohio State a cheater because a photo leaked out of a coach being on the field during player workouts. Jack, what's your take on that?
There's no way an Ohio State coach would ever, and I mean ever, be ignorant to the fact of any rules in place.
Yeah.
That's what I'll say.
Well, my favorite thing about it is the fact that Harbaugh has the guts to call Ryan Day out after Ohio State blew them out at the Big House 56-27.
You'd think
he's 0-5 against Ohio State.
You think you would stay in your lane at that point, but Harbaugh's a loose cannon.
I think Harbaugh's biggest issue is, like, it's been 5 years. He hasn't beat Ohio State. And I think he just realizes no matter who he recruits, no matter what type of Florida practices he has or any Italy trips he takes the team on, it's not going to help them overcome Ohio State. So I think what he's basically counting on is his friend coronavirus helping him out and these new pandemic rules helping him cheat his way to a Michigan-Ohio State victory. That's my take on it.
Look. Anytime you see coaches throwing pretty petty jabs at each other over a phone call, over something way bigger and more important than it, and Day goes to his players and says he hopes that there's a mercy rule added because they're going to hang 100 on them.
100 on them.
That's some good shit. That's what we need because sports has been lacking.
But I wish they were the opener now. So at least if there's one game of the season, that's the
obviously game. Everyone wants it to be the whole opener. So if it gets canceled, we've seen it, but it's good for the rivalry because maybe Michigan's gonna be relevant now because they've been getting owned by Ohio State. Ryan Day just said he wants to hang 100 on you. Not even that he wants to. He says his team is gonna hang 100 on Michigan. You don't say that in a rivalry game unless you really think you're gonna do it. Michigan better wake up. It's go time with Ohio State. Ryan Day is all business. Jim Harbaugh reaching out there and doing that. Total football guy move, but, I mean, you have no grounds to stand on. So
And it's funny.
Weird decision.
It's funny because one season, Ryan Day has only been a head coach for one season, and he has the swagger of a coach.
He's got that Ohio State. Like, Ohio State is like the Duke of college basketball. Straight up.
Without the championships.
Without the championships and the coaching staff. In recent years. a little – it's not Coach K-driven, obviously.
Yeah. I mean, they've had guys like Zach Smith on the squad, so I mean.
Right, but, you know, you have Dave learning under Meyer, and then they had who's the guy before
Meyer? Meyer, who is the most honest, down-to-earth guy on,
right.
in
and
coaching.
And then the guy before Tressel. Tressel, right. And he got kicked tattoos. Out for being even more shady, too. So I'm like, it's Ohio State, Ohio – like, they just – they feel like it's us against the world.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yep. And Harbaugh tries to be sneaky, but he always gets caught. Like Ohio State, they let so many things go.
Yeah.
But with Harbaugh, he never gets a break. The Florida practices where he was trying to do the satellite practices.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then that got banned.
Yeah, just trying to go underneath everyone. Thinks he's above the law. Whatever, Jim.
Because, you know. His brother, you know, they come from such a successful football family with his brother getting carried to a Super Bowl win with Ray Lewis and that defense with Joe Flacco leading the way. And Kaepernick took over for Alex Smith and carried Harbaugh to a Super Bowl.
It was – I forget.
That team.
I forget.
Can you imagine if Harbaugh won a Super Bowl and then what he'd be like at Michigan?
I don't think he would ever go back to Michigan.
I think he – nah. Think about that.
I think at that point, if he won a Super Bowl, he would tell everyone that he won a Super Bowl. And he would make sure to take that team that won that Super Bowl, put it into, like, a little bottle, and just save it forever. And everything that team was, Harbaugh is going to look for in every team afterwards.
Yeah.
If his quarterback was a lefty – and he had
always would
no. Not just that he's a lefty, but that he's a vegetarian. Harbaugh's gonna go get a lefty vegetarian. Sure. It won't matter. He's gonna be like that. I think if he finds
his linebackers run back
to what it was.
His linebackers can only have the initials PW, like Patrick Willis. Like they have to have those initials, or else they're not Michigan quality, or they're not championship quality.
I don't see, but. Harbaugh is gonna have a little issue right now with the rules being put in place by the Big Ten. So the presidents had a conversation today. Pretty sure it was a big conference call. And the decision was that teams will not be allowed to go to like full pad practices. They're still going to go helmets only, trying to limit the contact between players. So no protective equipment allowed at this time. It's a very Big Ten, I wouldn't say it's a Big Ten, it's a very college athletics move to announce a schedule and generate so much excitement for an upcoming season and have students on camp or student athletes on campus working out, getting ready.
And make students come back because they think they can go to games.
Right.
Like Iowa announcing they'll have 10 to 15,000 fans.
And then after that announcement, then the presidents have a meeting today and they said, oh, it's a rapidly evolving situation. Everything is so fluid. We don't know if we can allow the padded practices right now, but you have to play in like 5 or 6 weeks. Look, like I don't even know what's going on anymore.
The two takeaways I have from that are, one, I don't know if you saw Aaron Donald's comments about the helmet masks.
Oh,
I know you've talked a lot about the masks.
What did he say?
He basically said he's like, there's no point in them. He's like, no. I want to breathe. Like, he's like talking about the difference between the face shields and stuff.
He's basically calling it bogus.
He's calling it like a fake protective thing, basically.
Let me see if I can find the guy from LSU who had it.
And then the other takeaway I have too, which you can go back into after I say this, is the fact with the no pads yet thing is, if football was so safe to play and if games could actually happen, they wouldn't be worried about players on their own teams coming into contact with each other that, you know, 5 weeks from playing.
Right.
And it's one of those things too, where the universities and stuff aren't looking out for the students' best interests by saying, oh yeah, we're going to play football, but you can't do this yet. And oh yeah, freshmen, come move into the dorms and come move back on college campuses. It's safe. It's just, you know, it's such a slimy move by schools because they're not looking out for the students' best interests. They're looking after the money and they're scared about the loss of money. That's more what all these – it's not even made on the factor of what could they make from college football or what can they make by students enrolling. It's more how much can we lose if we don't do these early callbacks.
Yeah, it's the situation is going to be it's going to be, like the presidents have called it, a very fluid one. So I found a picture of the helmet that LSU has worn for their practices. I'll pull it up really quick. So this is the look. So basically the visor on top is just being, and you can see it in this video on the left. Literally, he says he can't breathe in it. Like, it looks like you're wearing a visor underneath.
And it fogs up.
That little slit, yeah. You can't breathe. That's literally impossible. That's such a, like, I get why they're doing it, the principle of trying to keep people safe and, like, keep the droplets in the helmets, but I've seen sketches and just ideas and concepts of, like, a mesh, maybe.
Yeah.
Stuff. It's like, I'm not, like, I don't have patent technology. I can't figure this out. There's people who know how to do it, but I think putting people into a plexiglass plastic fishbowl with a helmet on is definitely not the best idea.
Would be awful.
Plus, if someone's sick, like, that's just keeping it, like,
and the Big Ten's talking about testing, like, I forgot if it's the NFL or college football, but they're talking about testing, like, Mondays and Wednesdays. So what do you do? Yeah, I think it's college. Monday and Wednesday.
Monday, Wednesday. So what if I get sick on Thursday
and then Friday?
I play Saturday. Yeah.
Right.
The season's done after week one.
Right. Right. And it's like, you know what? Part of the thing, too, is you see bars like Summit and DC's opening up and staying open.
They're going
to. Do you really expect all these players to say, we're not going to go to a bar or we're not going to go to a restaurant? You know?
I think it's going to be different, though, with Kirk, because he, again, like, the program's not in the best spotlight right now, but he always needs. In, like, every Division One coach, they always need a sense of control over their program. I'm sure they're going to put rules and protocols in place for them to not be allowed to go to those mass gatherings. And I'm sure if someone is found at one of those, they'll be, like, suspended for team rules or whatever.
Right.
I don't think Kirk can let that go, especially at a school like Iowa. Like, the social life is the bars, and football players frequent at the bars. I don't think he could let that slide. I mean, if you let the guys tweet for once, you let them go on social media for the first time in forever, you got to – I mean, in Kirk's eyes, he's got to draw the line somewhere.
But then the question, too, is the players might feel they have control. And, you know, this can only be something if we can ask a player, you know.
Yeah.
But the players might have a new level of freedom or power that they didn't think they had before. So I think they also have a leverage over Kirk if they really wanted to throw it in his face and say, hey, you know, if we're not able to do what every other student's allowed to do, you're abusing your power, and start throwing stuff out like that too and turning it even more and, you know, making more accusations, whether they're true or not. So I think it's going to be interesting because also too, you got to think of every school. So if you know, if there's a Rutgers, for instance, who knows, they're not competing for a national championship right now under Schiano.
Right.
Are they going to say to themselves, we're going to be in total social isolation on campus while we're trying to compete to get torn down by Big Ten schools in Big Ten? Right. We're only playing Big Ten players, so we could very well go 0-10 this year. Like, that is something that is likely for some of these college programs where they have really bad records because they're only playing, you know, top schools and, you know, in the Power Five. So then do they say we're going to lose and not have fun, or are we going to have fun and lose, you know? Because, you know, the NCAA is basically trying to keep their investments afloat while trying to trust 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old kids to make the decision. These aren't pros getting paid millions of dollars.
No, technically, under the NCAA's guidelines, this is all just an amateur sport.
Yep.
This is all just an amateur sport where, in those same rules that they still follow from like 100 years ago, the coaches were not allowed to be paid. But again, here we are today, and the coaches are some of the highest paid individuals in the state. So.
Exactly.
You kind of see where the money is.
Kirk is literally the highest paid Iowa employee.
No, it's, if you look at any of the states, Alabama, one of the Carolinas. I don't know where Clemson is. I don't know which one. I think it's South Carolina.
South.
Yeah. Yeah, all right, cool. South Carolina, I'm sure Dabo's number one. Like, seriously, these guys make millions. Millions on an amateur sport that was built off the idea of not playing for, making money. Right. But the NCAA still wants to follow these 100-year-old guidelines. But
to keep the perception alive behind what people love about college football.
They're purists. They want to keep everything pure. But in reality, the product is the player. And the player in this situation, in college athletics at least, do not have the same say.
Well, they make it, they make, well, they make it kind of like a religion, like a, like, you know, I went, when I was younger, we went on a trip to Italy or whatever, and we visited like the Vatican or something. And they used to basically go off of the idea of pure religion of, oh, if you donate to the church, good things are going to happen to you, or you get, you have to give money in order for good things to happen and for you to be considered a religious person. So people are throwing in money like crazy every week because they thought it was the only way that good things would happen. And that's kind of like with football too, where if the perception behind student athletes gets broken and they start getting paid, oh, college football, the joy of just, you know, the tradition, the love of the game, they're not playing for the love of the game. Now they're playing for money. Like, it, the NCAA fears it's going to be dirty. It's going to be a dirty look. Compared to just accepting it, letting people get compensated for what they deserve, and going from there. And now talking about football from a different outlook in terms of the pandemic and in terms of what college football will look like, do you want to pull up the Big Ten or the Big Ten / Iowa schedule for the season?
I just have the Iowa schedule.
Oh, you do?
I just have that works. Right here. So I have week one, they're playing at home against Maryland. Week
two. Do you want to share it?
I'll share it. Yep. Share. There we go. All right. So we got Maryland week one at home, Purdue at Purdue, Minnesota at Minnesota, Nebraska at home, Northwestern at home, Illinois at Illinois, Penn State at Penn State. See, the difference I forget is, like, I look at Penn State at Penn State and I go, holy shit, we're going to get rocked. But that's right, but that's not 100,000 people at Penn State. Yep. I forget that. Michigan State at home, Wisconsin at home. That's a nice game. And then Ohio State at Ohio State.
See, I mean, Ohio State, I think, can make and break our season.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know?
So I'm going to go through. Maybe it's a fun game.
I think it's a win because they don't, it's going to be one of those things too, with whoever's the quarterback between Spencer and Deuce, it's going to be, they've won a bunch of games and they're going to have the confidence going into that game with not worrying about the Penn State atmosphere.
Yeah. Win.
That's a win. I think that's a loss. I don't know. I feel like that's a trap game because you would think having it at home, because here's the thing. They didn't beat them they didn't beat them 2 years ago at home. Barely they lost, but that was with a full house. And I think some of it going in is they're going to be like, oh, we have home field and stuff. But I think by then, if football is still being played, I think fans are going to be kicked out of the stadium and school's going to be closed.
Yeah. So I agree. Let's see. Can I see, like, how much a ticket is?
How much would a single game tickets?
How much? Yeah, how much is a ticket for the Maryland game? How much do you think I really think that it's going to be overpriced.
Oh, they're going to be a few hundred bucks because the season ticket holders who get them are going to be bidding them off.
Let's see. Oh, I don't – single game tickets? No, they don't have them up yet. Well, I don't know. I don't know if students are going to get a fair shot at being able to go to the games. I have a feeling
they're going to do something like lottery or something where it's going to be like all the seniors get their choice.
They get first pull and that's, yeah. I hate
lottery systems.
Because that doesn't, you're trying to cater a good experience immediately to the freshmen on campus and their first year on campus is going to be terrible. So,
yeah, can't even eat in the dining halls.
Dude, did you see there's like RAs that are like, opting out?
Yeah.
Like mass amounts of them. They sent a letter like the student government did to President what's his last name? Harold? Bruce Harold?
Yeah.
They sent it to him saying, like, we need more protocols and more transparent information. Basically, and then the student government said we shouldn't have classes in person.
Give it 3 weeks. I first said two, but I think they're going to push through the first week and then say, okay, we'll give it two more.
Do you
think by September 1 through 8, around that week, they're going to be closed?
Do you think we're going to keep people in the stands? Do you think they're going to keep that 10 to 15,000?
I don't think they're going to start with fans in the stands, probably.
I don't know.
I hope they do, but I don't think they will. I think the only people in terms of fans will be families. And I think it will be big time donors who are paying millions and hundreds of thousands of dollars for the football team.
I ask because in the state of Iowa, they're different with how they do their high school baseball. They play their high school baseball after the school year finishes. So they'll start in June rather than like April.
Oh, really?
And so what they did in Iowa was they started it on time. They allowed people at the games, fans. They had to social distance, I'm pretty sure. I don't know if masks were required, but everyone was like, it was I don't know if it was business as usual, but it was damn close out of all like the high school sports. So then the state championship series comes around and they were playing at Principal Park where the Iowa Cubs play in Des Moines. And they were, they had a bunch of people in the stadium, Sam. But they had them. I'm gonna see if I can find the picture. They had
were they like spread out, or how did they?
Yeah,
do
they
it?
Had them. They had them spread out, but they had it. They had it so if you were like in a family, you were able to like sit with your family, so you wouldn't have to be separated. So if there's like a family of six, you could sit in your row with a family of six. But then there would be a row in front of you and a row behind you, and I'm sure maybe like an extra row, but. Iowa, like, high school baseball was really, really good at trying to keep everyone safe. Here it is. It says, some COVID stats. The Iowa high school baseball season has now ended, the only state where high school sports have taken place since the pandemic. 94% of the teams were unaffected. 96 of them finished their season. All of the infections were reportedly mild, and fans were allowed all season.
Wow.
So that's why I'm just curious to see if Iowa's going to keep – because obviously, like, the high school baseball's already set a benchmark for the residents of the state of Iowa that it can be achieved on a smaller level. But this is, you know, University of Iowa athletics. Obviously, it's a different animal. But Kinnick can hold nearly 70, 80,000. You put 10,000 in there, maybe even 5,000. I'm sure it works. But like you said earlier, it all comes down to the money, and that's what drives all of this. They really don't want to lose money. They're trying to find the most ways they can to save money. You know, I don't know. I don't know what they're going to do.
It's going to be interesting. And, yeah, it's going to be chaotic, and it's going to be controversial.
Yeah. That's kind of I really don't think anyone's going to be – I think everyone will be upset in some way this semester. Not everyone will be happy. Everyone's going through this shit, so.
Yeah, and great way to sum it up. And for the final topic I think we're going to discuss for the podcast today is MLB and what's going on with them with protecting players from COVID and everything going on with that. So if you want to kick that off, Jack, you can.
Yeah, so basically the league, the MLB, amid – the Marlins, the Cardinals, the Phillies, and other teams who have had cases and games canceled, including the Field of Dreams game, which I was pissed that got canceled. But oh, they
such
said
a disappointment.
They're going to bring it back. They're going to bring the Sox back. Maybe the Cardinals. It'd be better if it was the Cubs.
Yep. I'd love it. Cubs, White Sox.
That would be nuts.
Field of Dreams.
But
I'll pay whatever I need to get to that game.
Dude, that was my dream, just to go to that game. But the MLB basically sent out just tightened protocols for a lot of the teams in a 6-page memo. They said all players and staff members have to wear their face coverings while they're in the stadium, but players on the field do not have to. So I was listening to the Sox broadcast the other day. Like, Benetti and Steve Stone were just putting the camera on, I don't know, whoever the Sox, the Brewers manager, and he made sure he kept his mask on, but he took it down once because he was yelling at the ump about missing a call. It was funny. But they also have to wear their masks at all times in the hotels except when they're in their room. They have to wear it when they're traveling in the buses or the planes. One pitcher said it's literally like the same thing we've been doing. Not a big deal. But teams must provide outdoor covered spaces for social distancing during the rain delays. Masks can be removed to eat or drink, but the memo prohibits conversational eating and drinking and mandates that only one person per row be eating or drinking at the same time. The league also restricts players from going to like bars, lounges, malls, or other places that have large gatherings. And they have added contracted security officers that will be at the team hotels for 16 hours each day, monitoring clubhouses, video rooms, and anything that will make sure people are adhering to the protocols. So,
yeah, I think it's going to be interesting because what I'm curious to see is what they're going to do if they get through the entire 66 days. What are they going to do in terms of records and letting people in who might not have 60
I think they're
games.
Just going to do win percentage, which is
so they're going to go. So right now, if they're going off win percentage, the Miami Marlins are the best team in baseball, yeah. 7-1 with replacement players.
They have. Did you see who was playing for them? They had a former speed skater.
Yep.
A former Olympic medalist speed skater.
And you know what I love about it too? Is the Marlins are loving it on their social media. They're flexing. They're creating memes right now. I've never seen the Miami Marlins account so lit. And they're talking about how they're the first place Marlins. Don Mattingly just became the all-time wins manager in the last 5 years, which is hilarious because he's never even made it to the playoffs.
Wait, so, really?
Yeah.
Who is the manager for the World Series team for the Marlins?
Jim Leyland won 97, I think. And then – I forgot who was there, 03. Oh, it was Jack McKinnon.
So, neither
– Jack McCown.
Mattingly's been there for, like, the worst period in Marlins
history. He was there basically from Jose Fernandez's death to when they were
That's literally when it started to end, was when he passed away.
It's so annoying because when you look at that Marlins team, it's the biggest what-if. They had Yelich, Ozuna – Stanton in their outfield. They were in
Real Muto.
That August, September, they had Justin Bour, who was lighting it up. Derek Dietrich was also playing. And
who was that catcher they had?
Martin Prado.
Didn't they have Salto Lamacchia too?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was not bad at the time either.
And Barry Bonds was the hitting coach the following year.
Yeah.
But the biggest disappointment with that squad was
and they had a new park. And it looks sweet. They were buzzing.
Yeah, and so the biggest thing that's frustrating about that team is August, September, I remember going to a game, and Stanton lit up. He hit, like, two homers. I forgot who it was against, but he hit one, like, right to the corner, almost hit the foul pole. It was awesome.
Yeah.
And it was such a disappointment because you felt the buzz. Like, you felt the playoff buzz. Like, okay, these boys are making a run. They were five games back, and they have an ace pitcher. Like, they're doing something. They had A.J. Ramos, who was in the bullpen, who was an amazing closer at the time. So they had the pieces, and they were one or two pitchers away from, like, giving the Cubs and, like, those teams at the time, like, real trouble. And that happens. Oh, and they had D. Gordon, too, in the infield. He was his second baseman, speedster. Everything came down after that. You know, Stan and Yelich, they tried pulling it together one more year, and then it was, okay, Derek Jeter bought the team. Let's move on.
Yep.
And Don Mattingly was, you know, proving that the Dodgers shouldn't have gotten rid of him as a manager, and it's a baseball tragedy. And then, you know, now talking currently, so you have the Marlins who are 7-1 right now because of the pandemic and stuff. But right now, Chicago Cubs 10-3 with Darvish the other day pitching 7 whole innings, which isn't you Darvish normally for the Cubs, and only giving up 1 run. Absolutely beautiful. And on top of that, if you convert it, I have to be that guy. If you convert it to a regular season schedule, the Cubs are like 27-6.
Dude, if we convert this to a regular season schedule, the Sox played like 30 games in a row on the road. They had like 7 games on the road, and they won 6 of them, I'm pretty sure, which is damn impressive. But
they need to go on the road. Tim's
hurt. He needs to come back.
Yeah, you guys can't stay healthy. You guys got to get a new training staff, honestly.
No, I don't know what it is. I mean, Rodon had Tommy John. He just came back, and now his shoulder's sore. Tim pulled his groin, pulling on it when he was hitting balls. I don't know. He didn't even hit a home run, so he shouldn't be pulling his groin. Abreu hasn't looked great. I mean, he leads the team in RBIs almost, but he hasn't looked awesome. Abreu looks awesome defensively, though. He's still unreal. Madrigal separated his shoulder, sliding into third. What the hell is that? Eloy wanted to chill out in the netting. This team wins ball games, but they look terrible doing it.
I told you from the start of the year stay healthy. I said from the start of the year, they wouldn't stay healthy. You can't
predict a team not staying healthy.
Kopech not playing, I was like, okay. Kopech
not playing, dude. I was like, okay,
they're
going to
be awful. They're going to be awful.
Tommy John.
Hey, just look at the records. Put the Cubs Sox records up there and just look. Just look at how baseball is played.
The Cubs lost to the Royals by like 30.
Yeah, you know what? Winning gets tiring sometimes. Sometimes you have to lose to humble yourself.
That's why you guys put Kimbrel out there.
We have the best record since we won the World Series. Best and the start
worst,
of the year.
Worst bullpen in baseball.
Yeah. Guess what? You know what? I'll take an awful bullpen if we continue to win. Who cares?
Sam, bite your tongue. Stop it. Hey, you don't want to ever say you can take a bad bullpen.
Guess what? Kimbrel. Before the deadline, Theo's getting us a bullpen guy. I'm calling it.
You want to know what his name is? Jose Quintana is going to be in your bullpen. That's your bullpen now.
Hey, if he becomes an ace in the bullpen, I'll take
it. That's fine. Yeah, amen.
I'll take Alec Mills as our fifth.
Long reliever.
Hey.
Quintana's a long reliever is a cheat code if he actually does that.
Hey, guess what? The Cubs are winning games. That's all I'm going to say. I don't see the Sox winning games. I don't see them staying healthy and winning games.
They're winning games. They beat the – beat the Indians last night 2-0.
Are they leading the division though?
I'll check the standings. I thought they were
second
right
last time I checked.
Oh my god, yeah, they're behind the freaking Twins,
right?
Yeah. Like what's wrong with that? They're super good. They hit an MLB record amount of home runs. The Sox are number 2 right now in the Central. Just Minnesota's 10-4, we're in 6. Yeah, for sure.
Miguel Cabrera, he's hit 3 home runs this
year. Dude, the Sox are number 3 in the AL. Number 4.
Wow, that's tough. The Cubs are number 1 in the NL. So,
okay.
Behind the Marlins, win percentage-wise.
I mean, Houston's not playing well. Oakland's playing above par. Well, yeah, because
they don't cheat anymore.
Cleveland's playing well. Minnesota's playing well. Boston's bad. Tampa's below average. Baltimore has literally nearly a 500 record. I don't know how. The Yankees are the Yankees. I mean, the AL's the AL. Let's take a look at the NL. Can I please?
Sure, go ahead.
I'm asking this damn website. All right. Miami 7-1. I mean, we already said
with replacement players. I love it.
Right, Atlanta's leading.
They're going to win a World Series. Honestly, I will not be shocked if the Marlins win the World Series because it's the most Marlins thing in the world.
The NL every West 20 is an years. Absolute gauntlet. Yeah, the 10-3 Rockies, the 10-4 Dodgers, the 8-6 Padres,
the 10-3 Cubs.
Very good teams. 10-3 Cubs. The NL Central's a joke. Jesus. Got the Pirates 3-11. Why did they even play baseball? Jesus.
I know. Cancel Pittsburgh. 2020, cancel Pittsburgh sports. And you
got St. Louis, who can't play a game. Cincinnati, whose staff is the nastiest staff in baseball, with Bauer, Castillo, and Sonny Gray, and they can't get a run.
And former Chicago Cub, Pedro Strop, in the bullpen. Have to throw it out there.
He's not that good. And the Nationals looked like trash. Like, I don't know. No one looks great in baseball other than
Except for the Cubs.
Teams that are above 500 look good, and the teams below 500 look like shit. I mean, what else did we expect from a shortened training camp?
And until the Sox start losing, which is bound to happen, then you're going to say teams below 500 are looking great. They're just not hitting their potential.
That's not going to happen.
Give it a week.
All right, so what's today's date? All right, August 15th. We'll see what the record's.
Next week.
Oh, the Sox are – oh, it's Zach Plesac. He's very good. It's going to be a long day.
Already making excuses for a Sox loss.
Oh, this guy's nasty. The Sox have been swinging at garbage the past two games. Absolute garbage. But they're winning, so it works. I don't know. Yeah. You got anything else to add, Sam?
Quality. No, I think we got to wrap it up here, Jack.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think we should wrap it up too. All right, guys. Well, obviously, we're going to get into a rhythm of this when we probably, you know, get school started and everything. We're still getting everything hammered away from the summer going into the school year right now. So
still chilling off campus.
Yeah, still chilling off campus. But once we get all moved in and everything's all good, we will get content hammering out for you guys. But the next episode, you could expect it for Tuesday. You could expect it Tuesday. And then, yeah, we'll just let you know.
And we might have a special guest on, too.
We might have a special guest. Keep your eyes open. I don't know. We're not going to hint anything or anything, but hint.
Yeah.
All right. We will see you guys later.